Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. So Fox News is reporting that the feds have seized Eric Adams' phone after the New York City mayor's indictments. There's a lot going on in New York City, and we go to our legal expert to get to the bottom of it. Hans von Spakovsky joins us once again, senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation and former FEC commissioner and DOJ lawyer. Hans, what a day. This time, a legal case in New York City that isn't about Donald Trump. Good to have you back.
Yeah, isn't that something? Yeah, I just finished reading the indictment, over 50 pages against Adams. And let me tell you, these are very serious charges. Five criminal counts, and it charges everything from bribery to wire fraud to his solicitation and acceptance of campaign contributions from foreign nationals. And if you go through it, what you find is that, in particular, a Turkish government official, he's referred to as a senior official in the Turkish diplomatic corps, started doing things like arranging free travel on the Turkish airline. And the free travel was such that he, Adams, and his companions, as they're referred to, they didn't just go to Turkey. They went to France, China, Sri Lanka, India, Hungary, and Turkey. Not only that, but they arranged free or heavily discounted hotel rooms in luxury hotels, great meals in high-end restaurants, et cetera. The indictment, I've never actually seen this before, and the indictment has photos of both, for example, the bedroom and the bathroom of the St. Regis Hotel in Istanbul, which they arranged for Adams to use for less than $100. You know how much that suite normally costs per day?
More than
$7,000. $7,000.
It's the deal of the century. Hans von Spakovsky with us right now. You know, I'm just going to be honest. In what we've seen with a lot of politicians who end up getting confronted with the law, it's usually pretty salacious. It's usually pretty dramatic. And this looks like corruption to its core. But, you know, I think that I errantly have a assumption that there's just some of this going on with all high level politicos that are out there. And if you're with among the right people, you tend to get away with it. There are people who are suggesting that Mayor Adams ticked off the Biden administration with his immigration stance. How long do we know that these investigations, if you know the answer to this question, have been going on? Is there a long timeline to this?
Yeah, there is. And I don't think this has anything to do with him ticking them off about immigration. This started in 2014 when he became the Brooklyn Borough president, where he sought and accepted luxury international travel. And look, part of it is not just that he was getting money from foreign sources, but listen, the indictment is filled with intercepts of emails, text messages indicating that Adams himself was directly involved in trying to hide all of this so that no one would find out about it. And the folks who were paying him illegally, giving him contributions, so forth, they weren't doing it just because they liked him. They were doing it because they wanted to get something in exchange. And one of the examples they give is that the Turkish official went to Adams and said, hey, we're opening up our new Turkish consular building, and we want it to be open in time for the Turkey president's visit. And we want you to talk to the New York Fire Department and tell them to forego doing a fire inspection so the building will be open. If, in fact, a fire inspection had been done, the building would have failed and it would not have been open. And Adams did exactly what the Turks wanted him to do, and the fire official who was responsible for inspecting the building was told, he would lose his job if he did not agree to do this and the building was opened.
Isn't that funny how that works? We're speaking with Hans von Spakovsky right now. I mean, it seems like classic corruption and, you know, a high-level official using their position to jockey for their own personal gain. Do you see this being a long, drawn-out process? Are we just, are we in the first inning of a very, very long game here?
I think we're in the first inning of a long game, but I think one of the reasons for that is this trial is going to take quite a while if Adams doesn't agree, you know, to plead guilty with some kind of deal. Because, look, the indictment itself, like I said, it's over 50 pages.
Yeah.
And this went on for many years, and so there is going to be a lot of evidence produced by the government in this case. By the way, if folks are wondering, well, this is a mayor, you know, how does the federal government, for example, have any jurisdiction over campaign contributions going to a local campaign? Well, it's because there is a federal law that prohibits foreign nationals, foreign governments, from spending, contributing, donating money, not just in federal elections, but also state and local elections. So when Adams, as alleged, was soliciting foreign contributions, he was violating federal law.
Well, we're going to watch it closely and hope that justice is served there in New York. There's a couple of things that I want to talk to you about, so we're going to shift gears here. Donald Trump's legal team is in New York right now making an argument on that massive, what was it, like $400 million payout or whatever that's gaining interest each and every day. Can you tell us, can you just give us a summary of what's taking place with the Trump legal team today in New York City?
Well, they are... they are appealing the decision by Judge Merchan that where he decided that, in fact, Donald Trump and his company had defrauded companies and banks who had lent him money, despite the fact that none of the banks complained, none of the individuals who lend money complained. In fact, all of them had their loans paid back with interest. And there were so many problems with what the judge did in that case, not only his unethical conduct and even remaining in the case, but his constant rulings in the case against Trump and in favor of the attorney general that did not allow Trump to get in basic evidence that would show that he was innocent of these charges. And those are all the claims being argued today before the New York Court of Appeals, and trying to convince them that they should overturn this verdict.
Well, we'll be watching that one closely as well. I wanted to shift gears a little bit. Since we have you and you work with the Heritage Foundation, Project 2025 could never have paid for the type of publicity that it has gotten in this election cycle because of the Democrats. The Democrats have seized on it. I think anytime you can come up with a one word or two word name for a boogeyman in politics, if you can make it stick, that's a very valuable thing. They've taken Project 2025. Right. They've assessed it as Donald Trump's blueprint for what he's going to do in his presidency. Donald Trump has really pushed it away at arm's length and says he hasn't even read it yet. But the Democrats have not missed an opportunity to try to put a tent on that circus and push it and sell tickets as much as they possibly can.
Well, that's true. But actually, I got to tell you, two things have happened. One, it has caused a lot of people, I think, to actually go to the Project 2025 website and read our policy proposals. And the response we're hearing is extremely positive. People read it and think, wait a minute. This is common sense. This is the way the government ought to be run. And the other thing that has happened is, look, the mainstream, the left-stream media, as Rush used to call it, as you know, they are very much in favor of Kamala Harris. They're almost running a campaign for her. But even those media sources, from CNN on, you know, all of them these days do supposed fact checks. And if you go to the website, you'll find all these fact checks, even by liberal organizations like CNN, admitting that the claims being made by Kamala Harris about Project 2025 are false.
Yeah, I mean, it always requires people to do a little extra research or a little educating of their own, as opposed to listening to either side of the echo chambers that exist in politics. Say everything here is good and everything here is bad, but I mean, it's not really. It shouldn't come as a shock to people who are paying attention to politics that those people super engaged on the far left would be appalled by Project 2025, because it's limited government, it's conservative constitutional government, and naturally those people are disgusted by that.
Yeah, they don't like the idea that the power of the bureaucracies within all these executive departments would be reduced, would be limited, and would the intent is to prevent them from going outside the bounds of what they're supposed to be doing and interfering in the everyday lives and professions of Americans.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of work needs to be done here. But, you know, I really wonder how rapidly Donald Trump is going to pick up Project 2012 if he were to get elected. And conservative principles that he would enact in many cases are likely congruent from a lot of the suggestions that are made in Project 2025. But you can quickly separate the people who are just there for the political carnival barking that don't spend much time actually reading the things like Project 2025. They actually really need you to not read Project 2025 in order for their argument to stick.
Well, that's very true. And I'd be willing to bet you that, for example, not a single one of the Hollywood celebrities who actually also come out and criticize Project 2025, I bet you not a single one has actually read a single word of the policy proposals.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. Hans, we appreciate you. Busy day as always. We always look forward to your expertise. Thanks for being with us. Oops, there he went. I leaned over and pushed the button a little bit too soon. Hans von Spakovsky, senior legal fellow for the Heritage Foundation, a former FEC commissioner and a DOJ lawyer. Check out his book. It's a good one to read right now while we are in campaign season, 40 days until the election begins. His book is How the Left Changed the Way You Vote. And oh, by the way, Illinois, you can go early vote today. We're going to have Jay Keevan on at 2:05, a rare 2 o'clock interview with my friend Jay Keevan. Jay Keevan, if you don't remember who he is, remember that one time where we went out and we got signatures at the very last minute because the Democrats in the state of Illinois were working very hard on trying to keep an opponent off of the ballot for Katie Stewart. Remember when Katie Stewart supported that bill to not have an opponent in her own election? Isn't that something? Isn't that something? Why would a state House representative, Katie Stewart, the Democrat who's been representing the Madison County area for maybe three terms now, I think three terms, why would she actively support a bill that says, no, we're going to not allow an opponent to be slated, as they have always done before, not allow opponent to be slated in her election? That's what she was in favor of. That sounds like a threat to democracy or something. I don't know if that's the right application of that. Keeping people from being able to run against you, it seems strange. Jay Keevan, super nice guy, law enforcement, decades in law enforcement. He's a public servant. He is not a politician. He is a genuine man, and he is going to come in and talk to us at 2 o'clock. And I'm looking forward to having him in here. And if you've got questions about the Illinois State Legislature, you can feed them to us on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. And also, no, today early voting starts, so get your tush over to the county seat or wherever you go to early vote and start casting your ballot and getting other people to go with you. The time is now. Let's take a quick break. Wiggins America next.